Welcome to Winning the Challenger Sale, a podcast where we take you beyond the groundbreaking book that's transformed the world of sales and share practical advice on how to show up like a challenger in your customer conversations. I'm your host, Andy Harris, CEO of Challenger Inc. Our goal here is simple, equipping you and your teams to win more deals by harnessing your inner challenger. This is part of Challenger Inc.'s suite of products designed to give you everything you need to go from idea to action, to meeting and exceeding your sales goals. Now let's get started. Welcome back to this week's episode of Winning the Challenger Sale podcast. I'm your host, Andy Harris, CEO of Challenger. For the month of January, we've been recapping the most popular themes on the podcast in 2022 to give you the chance to start the year off strong with the best insights from last year. Our most popular theme was persuasive storytelling, which we summarized on our last episode. Definitely check it out if you haven't already. So today, over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll be sharing highlights from our second most popular theme on the podcast last year, which was turning interest into advocacy, or how can you take a single interested stakeholder and turn them into an advocate for you among the broader buying team. Now, before we jump into the recap, I wanted to remind you why this topic is so important. When Challenger studied B2B buyer behavior, we uncovered two findings that have stuck with us over the years. The first, on average, the number of stakeholders involved in a B2B purchase rose from 5.4, which is cited in our second book, The Challenger Customer, that came out in 2015, up to 11.2 as our most recent study in 2020. The second, we found that only 49% of buyers who actively want to buy from you are also willing to advocate for you within their broader buying group. As it turns out, willingness to buy does not equal willingness to advocate. With that many stakeholders getting involved, advocacy from within is critical, and it makes a lot of sense why this was such a hot topic for last year. So with that, I'll introduce the first clip. You'll be hearing from Moore Asselin. Moore is the founder of FDTC, From Demo to Close. It's a sales demo training and coaching program for AEs and the B2B SaaS companies. He also has a podcast, SaaS Talks from Lead to Close. What I like about this episode is that it's really focused on how to do demos really well. Moore will talk more about how to navigate multiple stakeholders, both during and after a demo. And he's got some really great tips. Let's hear it.
It's really important to understand the psychology of your prospect and understand where, why they are here and not somebody else. I'll give you an example. All my examples are real world, but I have a client, they're in the sales engagement industry, sort of a competitor to outreach. And a lot of times they speak to agencies, marketing agencies, who are looking to do outbound campaigns for their customers, which are B2B customers. Now, I was coaching one of the students. I was like, when you're talking to the agency, do they really care that they'll see an increase in reply rates, or do they really care about recurring business from their customers? He's like, no, they care about more recurring business because they're the agency. That's what they care about. So they need to find a solution that works. So when you're speaking to the agency and you're trying to empower them, help the agency realize that by using your system, they're going to get repeat business. And at the same time, their customers are going to get increase in lead gen. So it's advantageous for both sides. So it's just important to understand who you're talking to. The way to improve the after is to do it during the demo also. So after you show a feature, let's assume for a minute there are multiple people, but you're only talking to one person. After you show a feature, you get the immediate person's feedback, hey, based on your problem of XYZ, is this a fit? Yes. Okay. I know you mentioned that Sally was also interested in doing X. What do you think she's going to say to this? So I'm getting feedback throughout the call, not just in the beginning of the call. And then at the end of the demo, I already know that they're going to say something like, I'm going to take this back to my team. I'm going to take this back to, internally. So one of the questions that I love asking, and I preach this all the time, is if you were to take this back to Sally, what concerns do you think she's going to have? I did this on a disco call last week with a founder that got on the phone with me. It's a founder, so he's a decision maker. And he told me, I got to take this back to my co-founder and speak about it. Yeah, totally makes sense. Curious, if you take this back to your co-founder and you show this to him, what concerns is he going to have? He literally said, damn, that's a good question. And then he just started telling me the concerns that the co-founder will have. I think it's also important to find out one of the pillar discovery questions, and this goes back to your first question, but finding out the time, so I mentioned, what's the problem? How big is the problem? Who is the problem affecting? And then the other question is, when do you want to solve that problem? And then to take it a step further, why that period of time? So, hey, what's the timeline for solving this particular problem, or at least starting to solve this problem? Next month. one of the questions I like asking is, why not later?
Oh, I love that.
And that forces the person to tell you why they want it sooner. And then you could also ask them like, hey, what about Sally? What is her timeline the same as yours? You can have this like open conversation. And so every follow-up that you do post-demo, you should be tying back into the timeline. It shouldn't be like, hey, do you want to, you know, just following up because you said you're going to test it out for a week. No, I'm following up because you said your timeline was next month and it takes about 2 weeks to get onboarded and Sally's going on vacation. Plus you have SKOs next week. And so wouldn't it make sense to actually do this sooner? Like you're tying in timeline that is affecting everyone else as well. It's not just about signing up to the software.
So that was our clip from Moore's episode. And I have to say, I love the last bit about managing timelines. Asking someone why not later could potentially illuminate the possibility of the buyer choosing the status quo or not making a decision, which as we know is especially asking someone why not later could potentially illuminate the possibility of the buyer choosing the status quo or not making a decision, which as we know, especially within the recent release of the new book, The Jolt Effect, customer indecision is our biggest competitor right now. Next up is Jeff Bajorek, who we've already featured in one other time in a recent episode that came out in December. His episode was also one of our top 5 episodes last year. Quick recap on Jeff. He's an advisor for B2B sales leaders, the host of the podcast Rethink the Way You Sell, and before that spent over 11 years selling in the healthcare space. We asked Jeff a really important question to getting to the heart of turning interest into advocacy. What do you do if you get someone who wants to buy, but they're unwilling to advocate? Let's hear Jeff's answer.
This is so layered because sometimes there's no alternative but to make them advocate for you. And when they won't, it means you haven't done your job. If they're not willing to advocate for you, they don't see the value in it for themselves. So you haven't established value. You haven't tried to eliminate the word convince from my vocabulary, but they're not seeing things the way that you would like them to see it. And the rule of thumb for me, one of the cardinal rules I have of selling is never let anybody sell for you because they're immediately not going to be as impassioned. They don't know the value proposition as well. They don't know your, you know, what you can do for them as well as you do. But as you have, you know, in these enterprise sales situations, and I sold enterprise, I was an enterprise seller. The medical device sales is an enterprise sale. It's not considered that so much because it's not techie and cool and fun. And because I did it door to door, because that's how you do it. But when you've got to get surgeons involved, and then you've got to get buying committees involved, and then you've got to get the medical staff who's, you know, responsible for all the coordination of the day-to-day stuff in the operating room to buy in, and then purchasing has to agree on a price. And none of these people are in the same building, by the way. Then when you get to implementation and like I'm standing in an operating room, making sure that the surgery goes well, because the most important person in the room is unconscious on a table in the middle of it, right? Like advocating for all that stuff. There's so many things going on and all of those people have to be bought in. And it is really difficult sometimes to get the people that you're speaking with, right? That one decision maker, let's say, who has to go and advocate for you. I think a lot of times they don't realize that they have that responsibility. So if they're not thinking about that off the top, if they're not recognizing the weight, the gravity of their responsibility here, they're not going to have the right context to listen to you, to pay attention to the stuff they know they're going to need to transmit to other people. They're certainly not going to have the vigor or the enthusiasm about it because they don't know they need to. Then all of a sudden, they're put in a position where, oh, this needs to go to value analysis committee, Jeff. We meet the third Thursday of the month. Okay, great. Can I sit in front of the committee? No. You're not allowed. You're the sales rep. We need the physician who wants to use your product to come and the word I'm looking for to vouch for you to really evangelize why they want us to spend more money on your product. Oh, and by the way, it's going to be at a time when they'd normally be in surgery. So they're going to have to take the pay cut to come and do it too. How badly do they want it? And then if I'm thinking about the surgeon, I'm thinking about the learning curve, I'm thinking about new instrumentation, I'm thinking about new rep in the room, all these things. That's a steep slope. It's really easy to have a conversation with me and say, oh yeah, Jeff, that sounds really cool. Oh, I see how my patients would benefit from that. Oh, okay, I can see how this guy, I can even build my practice around this disruptive technology. Oh wow, there's a big win in it for me. Except the status quo is so safe and warm and cozy and nice. Am I having bad results? Do I have a full schedule? Do I really need to grow my, like they question everything that you throw at them And I guess the point of this is, if you don't set those expectations up front, if you don't lead through the sales process from the very beginning, if you don't create the necessary amount of tension that has to, you know, exist in that sales process from beginning to end, they're going to stop. I'm actually surprised that 49% is as high as it is, because sellers are stuck in the ways that they've been hearing about and been taught for years. The state of the art of professional selling is not, let me tell you all about my product and how it can help you. The state of the art of professional selling is leading your customers, your prospects, to make the decisions that they need to make to grow their businesses. And you have to do that in a way that cuts through the noise of all the other marketing and everything that's out there, that cuts through all the other people that are trying to get their attention even more directly than just yelling on social media or whatever. And you have to lead them through a decision process. And if you don't realize that from the word go as a seller, you are doomed to fail. I hate to say that. You might get lucky here and there, but if you don't recognize your responsibility in leading your prospects through a decision-making process, you are not practicing the state of the art of professional selling, and you will get left behind. Now it's, I need to know what their buying process is. And Mike, I know their buying process in this case, because I've been through down this road with a couple other customers before, better than the customer does. So now I have to sit Doc down and I say, okay, here's what's got to happen. You're going to need to take it to committee. Committee's going to do everything they can to make it hard for you to bring it to committee. I'm going to give you full transparency. We're going to be in the ballpark. We're not going to make you look bad with the price here, but it's an upcharge. And this is why, for all the reasons and the patient benefits. And oh, by the way, the hospital has the money, even though they're going to tell you that they don't. You got to stand firm here. If you really believe in this, wait, you really believe in this, right? Like we're good to move forward, right? Okay. And then this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen. And we're looking at probably 3 or 4 months once it happens, before we can get everything up and rolling, because of the roadblocks they're going to put in front of us. Are you still in? And then you have to lead them through that process. Once you get the confirmation that they want to use your thing, in my case, it was orthopedic implants, that's where the job starts. 80% of salespeople will say, oh, yes. They start mentally cashing those commission checks. They start dreaming of the new car, or just imagine what's going to happen, because this is the one thing that's got to fall, and then all the rest of the dominoes will go, and this is going to be great. And I just started my career and whatever. And it's like, Now we have to get all the other people involved. And there's 9 of them, at least.
Not sure if you caught that, but there was some tough love in that advice from Jeff. If you don't want to get left behind in sales, you have to learn how to lead your buyers through a decision-making process. Spot on. Jumping into our next one, we have Nate Nasrallah. Nate is the founder of Flint, and he has shared so many great nuggets on this podcast that it was hard to just pick one. Listening back, the part that stuck me was his mantra of selling with your buyers, not to them. That's such an important sentiment that bears repeating. Here are some of Nate's insights around this idea.
It stems from what I would call a bit of a prickly take, in that I don't believe sales reps close deals. I believe buyers close deals. And the reason for that is, if you look at all of the make or break moments that are happening in the sales process, it's very rarely happening in a sales meeting. Instead, it's happening during a buyer's internal meetings when you're not in the room. And that's when the champion on the buying team, specifically out of all the different buyers, is delivering the pitch, sharing your value, handling the first questions, the objections. And so it's key that, one, you actually have a champion in the deal, that you've created them in the first place, but that they are able to sell with you. They are able to articulate and communicate your value. So when I talk about selling with buyers, not to them, it comes back to this idea of the job of a seller is to create and then enable a champion in the deal, because that's how you can influence so many of the make or break moments that otherwise you're not around for. What a buyer is ultimately doing is selling internally. And so you, as somebody who thinks about this all day long as a seller, you can transfer some of that to create a challenger out of the buyer that you're working with. And that's where, like, the challenger customer kind of picks up some of these basic ideas. But it is not uncommon for a buyer that you are working with to think, well, like, I don't necessarily agree. Even maybe the source of disagreement is them. They're like, we're not going about this the right way. But they either don't have the confidence or I won't call it the competence, but just like the training, the ability to go out and challenge everybody else in the room. Because remember, this is the environment that they live in every single day. They work with these people day in and day out. And so there's a lot more wrapped up in potentially challenging, if you've never done that before, than there is for a seller or somebody external. Tension in the deal is healthy because it's going to come there at some point. And so if you can be a part of understanding the source of the attention, then you can be part of disarming and going about it in a very productive and a healthy way. Because a deal, again, will always have tension. It's just a matter of, do you know about it and are you helping address it? When I talk about like inviting tension, it's as you're developing some trust, some rapport with one of your buyers, and you're thinking that things are like going smoothly. You're like, my gosh, I'm just going to glide to the finish line. You need to start introducing some different friction points. And so I might say something like, hey, our team has a rule that whenever we're making a big decision, we can't do that until somebody disagrees. That way, we're truly feeling confident. So it's a shared goal. Like, they definitely want a low regret, confident purchase decision. So what do you think? Is there somebody who might be willing to disagree with us? And the key here is willing to disagree. And so you're appointing somebody to that role and inviting them to say, throw your toughest at us. And especially when you think about all of the time that as a seller, you spend internally training, professional development, a lot of it is around understanding why do deals go off the rails? You see countless deals, definitely more than your buyer sees, more often than they are buying something. So this goes back to this idea of, can you teach? Can you be a part of setting somebody up to help win internally in all of those conversations so that you can basically translate some of the challenger skills that you've developed as a seller to that person and enable them?
If you're not doing that today, you better start. Ask yourself multiple times throughout your deals, am I setting my buyer up to win internally in all of their conversations? The answer should always be an enthusiastic yes. So we're down to our last clip from the final episode of Turning Interest into Advocacy. This one is from Brandon Fluharty. Like Jeff, Brandon was also already featured in our top 5 episodes from their 2022 recap from December. So we're sharing another great clip from his episode here. Quick reminder, Brandon has closed over $50 million in large enterprise sales and SaaS businesses, and now he channels that experience into being a recognized sales thought leader. So we chose this clip from Brandon's episode, not because he mentions our second book, The Challenger Customer. I promise we are not paying him to promote our books, but actually because he talks about the mindset you need to have with your mobilizer or your advocate. Particularly in enterprise deals, we couldn't pass up this opportunity to share this advice with you again. Let's hear what he has to say.
When it comes to trying to really win these large, transformative, consultative types of deals, the challenger customer does do a great job of painting what is reality out there. And still today, it really started to jive with things that I was already experimenting with coming from enterprise sales into more strategic accounts of, okay, how can I design a really amazing experience that this mobilizer can really feel comfortable in wanting to invest their own time and energy and attention? Because, you know, those are the finite resources we're dealing with, but it's also the finite resources our mobilizers and our champions, our stakeholders are dealing with on the other side. And so I always try to make it a principle of, okay, how can I make their job as easy as possible, but without letting them off the hook to invest in putting their fingerprints on this deal and putting their stamp of approval on this. So again, it was this symbiotic relationship of, okay, I see you, I hear you, and I'm even going to challenge you and provide my own thoughts here, but we're going to do this together. And as quickly as I could get to that sort of consensus, then I knew I had a high probability of closing that deal. And it again just came from, how do I design an experience that makes your job easier and makes your job easier to input what we're going to need to create this thing together? And this thing together ultimately is the proposal for how your company should operate so that you can go and make it easier. It's not a selling problem, right? Everybody that we were engaged with agreed with what we were trying to offer the world. They agreed that our product could help make the customer experience better. So it wasn't a sales problem that we were solving for. It was a buying challenge. And again, coming back to the book, that was, I think, a really important concept that resonated with me, that once I started putting these design thinking principles in place, that's exactly what I was solving for. I was helping a large organization to buy a large customer experience transformation. And that's what we needed to co-design and collaborate and work on together, so that that end product had our fingerprints on it, it had their fingerprints on it, and that makes it very easy for a C-level executive to sign off on it and say, okay, let's spend 7 figures, 8 figures to do this thing so that we can start operating like this in 6 months, in 12 months, in 18 months, and so forth.
And there's Brandon again, dropping some serious knowledge. I especially like the part about the difference between a selling problem and a buying challenge. You have to know which one you're trying to solve before you can truly join the buyer on their purchase journey. So that wraps up our final episode for January and our final recap of the top podcast content from 2022. We hope you enjoyed listening to this special episode of Winning the Challenger Sale. I'm so excited to kick off a brand new series of episodes for this podcast in February. I'll be hosting new episodes starting on February 7th and back to our regular weekly cadence, where I'll continue interviewing guests of the same high caliber you've got used to from last year. Our goal will continue to be the same as it's always been, to equip you and your teams to win more deals by harnessing your inner challenger. I hope you'll join me on this ride. See you in February. Thanks as always for joining us here on Winning the Challenger Sale. For the tools and resources you need to close more deals, head over to challengerinc.com.